Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Susan Millsaps, and I want to welcome you to this application workshop on nurturing relationally wise care teams. Also want to introduce my husband, Barry. He is my support team, and appreciate him a lot. He's been working hard, I assure you. He's been working hard all morning to keep me on track, and he's going to help us track questions. And I will answer as many questions as I can. I would prefer to do that in between the different sections. But you should have, hopefully, a handout. If you all got handouts printed out, and I think Susie may have a few extras.
Does anybody need?
Okay. And on the back page, you will find some links to my website, my online courses, and some social profiles, including LinkedIn, and I also have a profile on Relational Wisdom website. Then, when you walked in, you should have received a sign-up sheet and a pretty little bookmark that has my favorite verse on it, and it took me through a very traumatic time in life. If you will take a minute and provide your name and email address, I would like to offer you a detailed outline of the presentation with a few pretty slides so that you have that and you can focus on engaging instead of having to take notes. I'm a note taker, so I know that that will not, stop some people from wanting to take notes, but I would love to engage with you today. So if you provide that, I want to offer you that. Plus, I have created a pregnancy decision chart, okay, that helps walk a client, and we'll talk about this in the presentation. Third, I want to offer you a free Zoom call where we can further engage on this topic and have additional questions and answers, because I have, a few slides to get through, and it's a lot to get through in this, and so we may not have detailed discussion, but I would love to engage further with you. So this is an application workshop, and we're going to address the question of what would it look like if volunteer staff and advocates could relate to clients as well as each other with relational wisdom. What would it look like in the context of a pregnancy care center? That's a broad topic. We are narrowing it down, and we're doing that's a narrow application. Let me restate that. That is a narrow application of RW and peacemaking. And we're going to take just a broad look at it. We're going to get an overview, and we're going to start with the client as she walks in your door, and we're going to track her visit until she leaves and the door closes behind her. So that brings us to doors. And the next slide. And the next slide. And my text team comes up. Okay. Did it It quit working. So this was supposed to be my one superpower.
This is this advances it.
Are you saying user error? Let's look at the door. Okay. So you're a forgiving bunch. Well, let me backtrack for just a second. In your bags, you had maybe one of these, right? And you had one of these, and it tells you some things. I'm not going to go through defining read and those other things, although I will refer to them. And, you have bigger versions of this and lots of other things that you can download online from the Relational Wisdom. Like, you have these little cheat sheets that are really nice, and you say, read, what was that? And you know right away what it was. So there's lots of information out there. But let's see what you would do with that information. So we're going to start with a door. When you look at this door, what do you see? Do you see risk, or do you see opportunity? What do you think?
There's an unknown.
Okay. I see a little of both. Even optimists, I think, would see a little of both. You know, I'm just not quite sure what's on the other side. And for me, that's a, you know, we use, if I use doors metaphorically, I think out of opportunity automatically. But in reality, doors have a little bit of risk because you don't know what's going to happen when you open it. We use them to gain access. You came into this room through a door, okay? And when we are afraid, we want that door shut. When we want privacy, we want that door shut. So how does a door represent your work as a volunteer or any of the work that we do in relational wisdom and peacemaking? And by the way, is there anybody here who has volunteered in a pregnancy care center? Or is currently or in the past as an advocate or a volunteer staff or in any support role? Thank you. Thank you for your service. And Dennis? Okay. Thank you, folks. It's this important work, and I thank you for serving women. I remember, see if we go first. So I consider this a risky opportunity. I remember my first day volunteering as a client advocate. I had been to training. I had worked with multiple clients in other fields, in long-term care, in mental health, in maternal child care. And I was used to working in multicultural, multi-ethnic, diverse socioeconomic groups, very underprivileged groups. And I said, I've got this. But when I sat down in that room and the first client came in, sorry, I don't know what the emotion is about, but it was traumatic. I was like, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? What am I going to say? The stakes felt so much higher. I knew mental health checklists. I knew how to do the intake form. Oh, but I wasn't doing that here. And when I wrote it up, I couldn't use any of those words that I used. There was a lot at stake here. And I wanted to serve her well. And I thought about everything. And, you know, I don't think I thought very much about her that day. I thought about, what am I going to say? And then I thought, how am I going to share my faith? And we're going to talk about that too. How am I going to get through this? You know what? I didn't hit this button. That will make us all more successful. And that's what I should have been thinking, but it wasn't what was on my mind. So I don't know what your first day was like, but I'd like you to keep that in your mind a little bit as we go through this. So one of the first things that you have to do in this risky opportunity that you have is to figure out how you are going to connect client advocate and client. How are you going to connect? And I use the cloud purposely because it's sort of a balancing, you know, how are you going to balance that interaction? How do you go through not just hers, but your expectations, your culture versus her culture, her needs, what you're trying to accomplish, the paradigms, the stories? You don't even know what the story is that's going to unfold. How will you balance that unspoken risk? Because it is unspoken. You don't know what's going to unfold that day. Where would you, and on your if you have an outline, there's some blanks you can write in a word. This is one time I do want you to write something in, or to think about it later. But if you look, where up here would you say is your risk? Which of those areas are the hardest for you to navigate through? And have you ever considered cost? What is your free service costing you? And then think for a minute on the other side. What's your client risking in this visit? How many doors did she go through to get to you today? to get to your clinic, and then to get to the room where she is going to sit down and face you for the next, what, 30 minutes, 40 minutes? It varies. Was she seen by somebody? Was her secret exposed? Maybe it's not a secret to her. Really don't know. So, you, during this first initial, this is, you know, part one of the client visit, she's in the door, and now you have first impressions. Not just her impression of you and your clinic, but your impression of her. In fact, I think that's a really critical thing to think of. Take a look at this. What do you know about this person? We'll assume they're her. I'm going to give you one assumption on this one. It's a human being, okay? This is not a mannequin, it's a human. What do you know?
Not much.
Okay, not much.
It's a girl.
Did I hear it's a girl?
Yeah, I think it's a girl. A woman.
Maybe. Nowadays you don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, what about this one? Total different look. What do you know about her? Oh, did I use a pronoun? I did. Okay. This person, because we're assuming these are all humans, or this one. How did she get to your door? What did she have to go through to get to your door? I know that I was scurrying, trying to get all my stuff together to get to the clinic on time, but what did she have to go through? And what risk did she take? That's what I should have been thinking about on my first day. Now, this is a little fuller view of the first slide. Same girl, you know, recognize the flowers. Who is she? Can you learn something from observing her, or is your first reaction to make an assumption?
Looks like she's going to be a mom.
Okay, either that or she's really sick. You know, and that could be the case. What else do you see about her? How would you look at her clothing? What would you say from her clothing?
I think happy, and I don't know, but just the flowers.
Is that the way you would dress to go to an appointment?
Probably not.
Okay.
Not professional, I'm gonna
okay.
say, probably.
Now, I could make up a couple scenarios for her, and I thought of one, and this is Maria, no, she didn't get her clothes from Goodwill, and she is the director of a multicultural center where they create art projects, and she's an artist. And she's working in Latin, she's worked in Latin America, and she loves the flavor of that. Or you could go, oh, I think those came from Goodwill. They're not matched. She must be poor. I mean, you could go anywhere with this. But the point is, you really can't tell much from any of that. So now let's think about let's apply for a minute relational wisdom. So this is an application slide, and this is, you know, if you have a question, raise your hand, or just, you know, speak it out. So what do we want to do in the very first step of her visit, this impression stage? That's what I'm going to call this, is the impression stage. This is your opportunity to practice awareness, which we know is part of the SOG. Acronym, self-awareness, other awareness, God awareness. And so, yes, you're going to monitor your self-awareness, but you want to maximize awareness of everything in the room, how this is going to make her feel, and what can you do to use your knowledge in this to create a better visit for her? Well, managing first impressions, we talked about. But you can do that by creating simple comforts. You can help orient her to the room and to the clinic. But you're going to be, in awareness, you're going to be monitoring the emotional climate too. You're going to really need to up your game on what are some emotional cues, but don't misread them. It might not, smiles don't always mean happy. What else can smiles mean? Why do monkeys smile? Monkeys smile because it is, as I recall, like an act of submission. They're afraid, and so they're saying, I'm okay, I'm not gonna bother you. You know, is that what she's doing? You don't know what you know, her smile means. Your smile needs to be genuine, though, because that's part of serve. So you're going to make some tentative wise observations. But these are only observations. You need to test them out. And you're going to withhold every assumption. No assumptions. So you are looking at who is in the room with you, but what do you need to remember? Who else is in the room with you? You have an advocate. You might be an advocate to her, but you have an advocate, and this is the God who can make a difference. We have an advocate right now in this room, and we are grateful. Thank you, Lord. Any questions on that part? Any thoughts? So let's go on then to, we've got her in the door, and our opportunity door. Let's keep our opportunity door open while we minimize risk. See the key? What is going to be your key to engaging with her in an effective way? It's time to transition from the waiting room to the one-on-one client advocate meeting. So at this point, I want you to consider who your client is. Are you going to say this one or this one? Who's your client?
Both.
Okay. I want you to think just a little bit more about that, because this really sets the tone for your interactions. Our client is always the person in front of us. And yes, well, I mean, you don't know if this woman's pregnant or not. Does every test come back positive? No, some come back false. Some girls know before they come that they're pregnant. They came for a different reason. But the person in front of you is always your client. If you're doing a mediation, the person in front of you is your client. If you're doing conflict coaching, you're coaching them on their side of the conflict. If your client is not the woman, what happens?
She'll figure that out pretty quickly.
She will.
Consider her the person that you're interested in.
And you better hope it's not a plant from a pro-choice group, because that's possible. She'll figure it out. And so often people say, well, you folks, you care about the baby, but you don't care about the mother. And once they pop the baby out, I've actually heard people say this, you don't care diddly squat about the mom. But you're never going to have an impact on that baby if you don't have an impact on that mother. Because what kind of a life, if you want to have save that baby for the Lord and for His kingdom, you better be engaging the mother. Anything else, anytime we try to go through this person to influence that person, what do we call that? Say it a little louder.
I said we're kind of guilt. It's a guilt thing in one way to try to force her to do something that.
But a really good word to describe that, and it does involve that, is manipulation. I had a situation where a woman and her husband were going to counseling, and the husband liked to use the, he says, well, I just think you're not saved. And so he emailed the counselor and said, could you talk to my wife about her salvation experience? And he was like, setting, you should have red flags going up right now, okay? And so the counselor bought into the idea. And he did. And the husband said, you know, you could just say da-da-da-da and, you know, talk, and then just say, so what kind of, you know, experience have you had? And this was a woman who was solid in her faith. It wasn't, the conflict wasn't about her faith. It was actually an abusive situation. And the counselor did it. Guess what? The wife found the email. Innocently found the email. And she's like, I am never going back to that counselor. How could you do that to me? Why would the counselor align with one party and just play in? She could never trust that person again. You want this girl to trust you. And so you are going to focus on her. And you're not going to reject her based on the decision that she makes. Okay, so I probably need to move a little quicker. Any questions on that? I mean, you know, we want to make sure we don't have agenda-driven service. As pro-life as we may be in our philosophy, agenda-driven service will come through every time if that's our goal, if that is our only goal. We do want to help babies, but we want to help the moms too. So, what did she think as she approached the door? That's what I should have been thinking about on the first day. How is she feeling? What is she thinking? Those are some RW words, aren't they? And you need to be ready to see from both sides of the door. So during this phase, you want to bridge the initial awkward tension, and it can be very awkward depending on who you're working with. And some can just seem so natural. And so you start out with greetings. We started out with a good morning greeting, and I don't know anything better than good morning to make me feel like, you know, good morning. You know, I actually have a good morning routine. We're not going to go there right now, although I could easily be distracted. You have information to give her. Where's the bathroom? Here's some water. Are you, you know, is the temperature okay? You know, is the seating, you know, how is the seating arrangement? You have to pay attention to those things. So you're using the atmosphere to make her feel comfortable and to feel welcomed and valued. Very strong RW and peacemaking principles. And you need to clarify initial expectations. That is probably the point that I think a lot of visits go awry on right up front, is that you didn't clarify the initial expectation. You may put a lot of energy into something and then find out, well, I already know I'm pregnant, but I need a Medicaid verification so I can go get signed up for my Medicaid. Or, yep, but you know what? I don't have the money to buy maternity clothes, and I heard that I can get some maternity clothes here, and I sure could use some help because there's a lot of things in my life that aren't just working right, and I'm not sure how to tell my family. And, I mean, so you need to know just what is her expectation, and you need to have a plan to meet that expectation, okay? And you need to know, as you talk to her, what you're going to do in terms of if you can't meet that expectation, do you need the help of someone else in the clinic or outside the clinic to meet the expectation for the need that she has right now, the real need that she has? What will it take to make this visit worth her time and her effort? Because a lot of girls go through a lot of effort to get to this clinic. They don't get to just hop in their car and, you know, buzz down here and, you know, you don't know what they went through. You don't know if they got cussed out by their boyfriend or threatened. You don't know. So applying relational wisdom to this phase of the keeping the opportunity open, that's our goal during introductory exchanges. Keep the opportunity door open during introductory exchanges. You're setting the tone, and the tone needs to be trustable kindness. You need to pace the dialogue, giving thinking space. You know, we can't just have rapid-fire questions. And you need to ask open-ended questions. Can you tell me more about that? Or can you tell me a time? And I don't like, whoops. Let's not do that. Okay, there's the button I wanted. This little word right here. Why do I say don't use the word why? Any thought?
Because people have a defensive.
Right. I could say, what do you think my reason is? And that would be asking what questions. And I have an article on my blog, and I think it's called My 6 Million Whys That Got Me Nowhere. And yes, you should recognize a poem from that. And if you don't, I'll tell you later. But you have to keep her, you know, not put her on the defensive. A lot of times we ask why when we don't know why. We wouldn't want someone to do that to us. You know, it's like your kids, why did you do that? And they're like, ah, you know. And then if somebody tells us, well, why did you do that? We're like, well, what right do you have to ask me that? You know, see, what? Okay, and you need to gauge your word flow and your word complexity. You're going to go through some materials. Sometimes they say, well, they have the, you know, have the client read such and such. How do you know if she knows how to read? How do you know what her skill level is? Does she have dyslexia? You don't know any of those things. And so you're going to have to find out, are you comfortable reading out loud? You just have to ask. But you have to, sometimes you have to slow down and sometimes you have to speed up. But you need to monitor. You're the monitor in the room, and to balance the emotional dynamics of this visit. So, any questions on that last slide and that application?
Just one I would ask, how would you determine kindly, can she read, you know, how well her skills are at reading, and how do you get there?
I think that's a comfort question, because some people, even if they can read, aren't comfortable reading out loud. You could say, would you like to, if you would like, you can read this out loud, and sometimes that helps us understand, you know, gives us an opportunity to understand better. It's a comfort question. It's like, you know, the temperature in the room. You like it colder or hotter, you know? And you may, and you know what? You may not. I know the clinic I was at, we had no control over that. So about the best I could do is offer her something, you know, something to wrap in. But I don't know if you can do that during COVID. So you have to be creative. But I think it's a comfort question, and also, if, you know, newspapers write, I think, in about a third grade level. A lot of times I know that when you are writing in certain venues, you use a certain grade level. And so that's the, you know, the word flow and the word complexity. Just the simpler you keep it, the easier it's going to be. And if it's somebody, even if it's somebody very educated, if it's somebody very educated and they have means, they're probably not going to be in your clinic because they're not looking for a free clinic. So anyway.
What would you have her read out loud? I'm not sure I know what she'd be reading.
Well, sometimes, okay, and I'm going on recollection, if it's a scripture, or sometimes clinics have a booklet that they go through, and sometimes they'll ask, I'd say most frequently it would be scripture. What do some of the rest of you have experience with this that you think? Reading a scripture out loud?
Sometimes there's some state statutory language that needs to be provided to them. In Colorado, they have some.
Okay. All right. That's a good point, and Candy is my go-to lawyer. She's my go-to for a lot of things, okay? Candy is a good friend, and I appreciate her a lot. So, so that's a good thing, you know? And if it's a decision, and I say, I want to make sure you understand this, would you read it out loud and see if this, you know, is clear to you? And that's something you will gain experience with, and you'll get some feedback on it. So, and it may vary from clinic to clinic, and basically, you do have to follow your clinic rules, because otherwise, if you don't, your clinic may have a problem, and you all may cease to exist. Because we are not popular, okay, in the healthcare field.
Yeah, and you, oh, I assume that it's always a one-on-one conversation?
Well, never assume anything, but it should be a one-on-one, ideally a one-on-one. Now, if you have an advocate that's in training, then it might be different. I recall at our clinic in Green, and this was in Greenville, South Carolina, Piedmont Women's Center, when you did your first one, you had a trainer in there with you, one of the staff, or one of the other advocates that had been doing this for a long time and assisted, and they were there to help you walk through any rough spots and show that you could engage this client in appropriately, you know, so they're not gonna take a chance. So it's sort of like, yes, well, I'm in training and here's, you know, and so, but you make that very clear, and so it's two people from the clinic. Occasionally a girl will come with a friend. My memory is that we tried to have the girl be in there alone with you. But if that is, and if she had children, which they're not supposed to bring children, we would try to make sure that they could be managed elsewhere, because that is an impossible situation if she has other children with her. And sometimes it would be two, not just one. So it is hard, but tell me why you, tell me what is behind your question.
Oh, some of it is legal. You know, you can get in a situation where he said, she said. The other is, as I worked with a birthright in Cody a long time ago, sometimes a couple would come in. And so I like to talk to the guy by myself, just
right.
Two of us.
Uh-huh.
But there are some situations where you probably want them both together, too.
I think most often in a pregnancy clinic, you're going to find a woman coming without the boyfriend or husband, because these are not all unmarried girls. Married women have abortions, okay? And sometimes, so you don't even know if she knows the father, number one, and if it's a mother that comes with a younger girl, that may be a very adversarial situation, because I had a client once, not at the clinic, but in a counseling situation, that her mother had forced her to have an abortion when she was about 18. That's not the mother you want in the counseling room with you, but that mother stays very, that mother's action stays with that girl for a long time. And the boyfriend may be pushing it. You know, she may be under threats, you know, and we're gonna get into that a little bit more, but I think ideally you want the one-on-one focus, because you have privacy and it's all about privacy. So, yeah. That's a good question, though. Thank you. You may, now, I want to say one thing. The best centers that I have been in also have programs for men. So you may have another visit where you set up and especially in abortion recovery, where you set up a visit for the boyfriend with, you know, a male advocate, or someone trained, and so to address their questions. And I think really there's an opportunity for peacemaking in this setting, because there's probably going to be some conflict in the family. You know, how is she going to tell the parents? So what we are focusing in our narrow overview today is the ideal one-on-one client, you know, relationship for the initial part, where she is balancing her decision making. Step two is going to be involved more, and parenting classes would definitely, ideally, involve the couple, both of them. And so then you would be having more interaction. So.
Susan, it might be ideal to have an attorney on your call list that you have as a reference, because sometimes a lot of their questions relate to, do I have to put his name on the birth certificate? Do I have to do this? Do I have to do a lot of things?
That's excellent insight. So Candy is saying, just for the recording, that it's helpful to have an attorney available to provide information on technical details like identifying somebody on the birth certificate. And, I mean, you can answer those questions, you know, but it would, you don't want to put, you know, your legal, you don't want to incur legal risk for your clinic either. So that's an excellent suggestion, Candy. Thank you. Appreciate the good questions. So let's step into the next phase of the client visit. And this is the conversation. What's the story that's going to unfold in this conversation? This is the core of the visit. And I have another important question to ask. Okay, so Mr. Tech Person, hello. When the slide advances, Dave's going to have a lot to edit. So we ended up having to use my phone as a hotspot to do this instead of the presentation that was on my computer, because it did something funny to the slides and the words moved, and I'm like, not this morning. Okay, that looks like a great slide to talk about. I like that one. So the story, you have her story, and she is sharing as an act of trust. That's her initial trust with you, is that you have built up the ability for her to do is to share her trust. But what about your story? Your story does not belong here. How you respond to her story tells her whether she can continue trusting you. Double star, exclamation point, this matters. Too often I have seen people go into this work because of their story, their trauma, and they are now trying to help other women. And they start sharing their story. That is not appropriate here. That's not going to help her. She has a God that can help her, not your story. So you need to focus on her unique story. How does she see her situation? You don't know what the best solution is for her. You don't know how she sees her situation. Does she see it as her worst nightmare? Is it a lost dream? It might surprise you sometimes that in a clinic setting, I had one girl tell me, and she was only 16, excuse me, she was only 16, and she was a little behind her peers, because this was normal for her culture and ethnicity, that you have a baby by the time you're 16. Otherwise, you don't fit in. Grandma's going to take care of it. And this is, you know, so this is not at all, this is not a crisis for her. It's like, oh yeah, this happens. Now, I don't want to get too diverted on this, but there are some really different ethnic views. And my daughter worked with young lives. So again, it is a different socioeconomic and ethnic group that she is working with. But they have a mentality in that it was surprising when I heard her talk about it. She said, these girls said, well, here's the way it is in our culture. If you do grown-up things, then you have to take grown-up responsibility. So these girls, Young Lives was mentoring them through staying in high school during their pregnancy and getting a diploma and being able to provide for their child then. A little different mindset. What if we all had that mindset? If we're going to do grown-up things, we better be ready to take on grown-up responsibility. And I thought that was insightful. Okay, here we are with the conversation. What's your role? You're going to listen well as you guide the conversation. What advice is she receiving right now from other people? You want to listen for who the influencers are in her situation. You want to listen for core beliefs that are guiding her considerations about what she should do and what her cultural framework is telling her. And the example that I just shared was a good example of that. And are there any unspoken agendas? No assumptions, but ask yourself, what could I learn by just listening well? So our application here is engagement. And you all have these little, you know, nice little stickers they gave us. And so self-aware, we went from awareness, now we're in the conversation, it is actual engagement. We have to be engaged, we have to be thinking about engaging with others, and we have to be thinking about engaging with God. We can't leave God out of this process. So you want to explore with compassionate understanding as you listen and learn. This is a time to keep an increased passport. What does a passport, peacemaking, we know this, right? What's a passport do? It gives us access to places that we would not otherwise have access to. So you have been working through awareness to do this, and now throughout your engagement time in this part, you're going to keep gaining that access, maintaining that passport. And you need to read yourself, and you have your little cheat sheet on read, And you're going to be reading what your client's reactions are and, you know, thinking about what she's thinking, but relax in it. You know, we don't want to be running through an acrostic in our mind all the time. We want to relax in it, get natural at it, so that it's just part of the way that you engage people. And you're going to serve your client in ways that she can accept. She may not want to accept all of the ways that you have to offer her. Find out what she's willing to accept, and that's where you go. So this is a client-led visit where you are mentored by the Lord Himself. It's a guided conversation. This is not investigative probing. It is not... It's not counseling, and that's a real temptation if you're from a counseling background. And it's just a visit, and it's a conversation, but it's a guided, structured conversation, and the conversation is going somewhere. And you need to know when, how, and to whom a referral might be needed. If conflicts or abuse surfaces, and her age is extremely important in this. And you need to know your training from the clinic, you should have been given a lot of state guidelines to consider. Everything you do, you want to remember God's patience and compassion towards you in your life. And then you want to replicate it to her. Any questions on that part? Any thoughts? So you're working your way through the visit. We're getting towards the end where you're going to wrap it up.
I kind of like what you said. So you have your counselor. If that's your background, and so you came into this, and it's not a counseling situation.
No.
What happens if it becomes a counseling situation?
Okay, that's a good question. So, you know, we've made clear this isn't a counseling situation, but what if things arise where you realize it is a counseling situation? You will not do counseling here. This is the no... let's see, I guess that was on a previous slide, knowing who to refer to when something comes up. And one of the critical things would be if she is underage. Okay? You have to know ahead of time how to handle that, because that's when you're going to call somebody else in normally, unless you are specifically trained and approved by your clinic. You're going to follow your clinic rules. Nothing I say here today supersedes your clinic rules. And if you can't abide by your clinic rules, then you need to volunteer somewhere else. Okay? Your state laws, you have to abide by these, whether they are favorable or unfavorable. You are, literally, you're an advocate. You are there to encourage and to nurture her. This is why we call it nurturing relationally wise care teams. Okay? That's maybe not a big enough answer for you, but I think we could explore that a lot in some scenarios. And so that's why we have a Zoom call on your little sign-up sheet, okay? So get your names down there and sign up for this call. Okay, thank you for that question. Yeah, and I had to guard that all the time because I'm ready to jump in there. The decision. Okay, I just have to tell you, this is my favorite slide in the whole thing, okay? I just want to, well, next to the favorite, there's one more coming that I like just about as much, but it's really fun to do slides where you can put baby pictures in them, okay? That's all I've got to say. No, it's not all I've got to say, but that I've said, I can go on now. The decision, so you've had a lot of conversation. You can't just sit there and talk all day. You have a time limit, you know? You've got things you have to do. You will be envisioning options and addressing uncertainty. Ah, we're back to that risky opportunity, huh? And this is where the risk, you're feeling the risk right here. And so is she. What could happen during this phase? Oh, emotional flooding. That's relational wisdom term, isn't it? And it clouds decision making. Now, there is so much material that I would love to get into right here, but this is an overview. But there's a lot about emotions and decision making, and actually I think it's probably a whole nother aspect of relational wisdom that has not been adequately explored yet. But if she's being flooded with emotions, and now what? What am I going to do now? This is, you know, you have a problem, and the immediate question is, what do I do? So, if she gets too much information, that can make her shut down too. If the emotional flooding isn't enough, information overload can shut down the decision-making process also. So right now, instead of, and I am an information person, I want to tell you, if you ask me, oh yeah, well you should da 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 da, you know, I can give you more information and more words, and there's this like, you know, it's like, it's just, it's too much. And so what you have to do is what you've been doing the whole time with your awareness and your engagement. What information is she asking? Focus on her question, not what you're thinking she needs to know. This is critical right now. And what information does she want? And if she wants information, you're going to give her more information. That is one of the reasons why I have this little chart, because it'll help keep you on track. And as you go through this, but I'm getting ahead of myself, aren't I? So what options has she considered? And that's a good question. And you just ask, you know, what are you considering? And then her decision-making style. And we all have very different decision-making styles. Do you know what my style is? It drives my husband nuts. Sorry, Barry. But my style is, I need to talk through it. And when I've talked through it the 10th time, he says, Susan, I'm not going to listen to this anymore. You can edit that out, Dave. Okay, here we go again. Whoops. All right. So, as you go through this, you need to stay, you're going to be discussing some difficult topics. This is not, you know why a lot of people don't volunteer? This is not easy stuff. You guys are doing hard things, whether it is pregnancy care work or any kind of peacemaking and relational wisdom. I think they used to call it the fine china. They used to, in training we talked about, you know, they're giving you the fine china of your life. Yeah, I see some nods there. You're going to support her. You're going to stay attuned to her. And with when I think of tuning, I think about instruments, because my husband and I sing together. And you know what? If we aren't in the same key, it is not pleasant for anybody. But he's really good, and he keeps me on time, too. And timing is important in music. Timing is important here. But it's like, if you can think of like a waltz, you know, this is sort of the waltz in maternal child health. That was a something that they used as an example is, you know, parent-child interaction, 0 to 3, mom and infant, is sort of like a waltz, where, you know, you're taking cues and giving back. And so you're doing that, so you're always going to be observing, and you're going to always be in the discovery mode. What are her thoughts, and what is her future vision? Again, you're going to pace and balance the information flow to avoid overload. I'd like you to consider and find a way to ask how her decision is going to be made. Is this a secret decision? Is she making it independently? You know, we've already explored this a little bit earlier in our conversation, but now we're in the decision phase. We're getting down, you know, you're cutting to the chase, so to speak. That's probably a really bad analogy. Just edit that one out. Okay. But is it going to be made cooperatively? Is she going to go back and talk to her boyfriend, her mother, her coworker? You know, whoever has been influencing her thoughts, you know, her favorite talk show host, I don't know. She's going to look it up some more on the internet. Or is it going to be imposed? Remember the example I gave you of the client whose mother forced her to have an abortion. And there are boyfriends that will take a girl to a abortion clinic and literally shove her out of the car and drive off. Now, that's not really relationally wise, but this is what they may be facing. They may be facing, I'm going to kick you out, you know, I won't support you. If she decides to keep this baby, who's going to support her? How her decision is made is as important as what her decision is, because it's going to affect how it influences her for the long term, both emotionally and spiritually. And that's where decision trees, I think, are helpful. You can keep things fairly level emotionally if you have something visual in front of her, and you can pace the conversation by going down the various options. So, you know, this is the carry side, this is the abort side. And what are the decisions you make? And then each one of these, she can stop and ask a question. And she's over here, the most questions I get on this chart are about the abortion pill. Because I have a line to surgical, which says, if incomplete. And that always raises a question. And up here, when it says, if, you know, confirmed intrauterine pregnancy, there's a little star and it says, if confirmed by ultrasound. And that always raises, why do I need that? Oh, well, let me tell you. And then there's a bunch of information you can give her. And you can also maybe get her interested in doing an ultrasound. And that is really an amazing thing to be able to sit in on. But this gives a client, as she's looking at this, she has an opportunity to visualize that path, to discuss it, and to take ownership of her decision, and to understand what her potential outcomes might be, what resources she might need, and it ends with future plans. She can also vocalize fears and doubts. So it gives a client an opportunity to process a processing framework for approaching a decision. But guess what? It provides advocates an opportunity too. It's easier to identify a client's needs as you go through the process. You can talk about decision-related conflicts. You can ask about, you know, you can monitor for loss of hope. And it helps you separate fact from fiction, known from unknown, and risk from certainty. Now, I'm going to go on a little bit of a limb here and say, I think one of the biggest problems we have is the abortion pill and the lack of information and the lack of transparency. And I have read through all of the South Carolina statutes, and they have enacted some good ones where she has to read through information. And I've also read through the abortion clinic things that they have to sign. And they have it pre-filled out on the form she's going to sign that says, I have been counseled, about the risks. And it's like, if you have that pre-filled out on a form that they're going to sign, what are they supposed to say if they've had counseling about it or not? And there is a, you know, there is a waiting limit, but there is a tendency on the pro-life side to make sure that every woman knows that she will have negative effects from this abortion. Every woman, there is this thought in some circles that every woman who has abortion is going to experience traumatic after effects. Do you all believe that? I see a no. I see a no. No, you don't know. Are you making an assumption? Yes. There are women who somehow go through life with multiple abortions because their paradigm says this is just tissue. This doesn't matter. And until they get into the light of the word, there's no other voice speaking into that. So make sure you know that it is a risk, that you don't present something as a certainty. Will everybody that has the abortion pill regret it and then have to have surgery? No. But are you aware there is a risk? And by the way, if it goes that way, the clinic that you get the pill at isn't going to pay for the surgery. I didn't know that. Well, just consider, how would you handle it? And by the way, what's your recovery plan? Okay? But you have to be really realistic about risk, cost, on both sides of the decision tree. And let her own the decision. There's one thing that you can be certain about. This is going to be an emotionally tagged memory. And emotionally tagged memories do tend to resurface. One of the things, I think we're down to about 4 minutes. I want to make sure that this, I have more information about this on my website. In fact, you'll see that exact picture right there. And that's my great-grandfather's barn. I just had to throw that in there. At their very core, all of your decisions hinge on belief. I started developing this idea, guess what, when I was working at Piedmont Women's Center. I had to find a way to share my faith. That was part of the way our clinic operated. You're supposed to share your faith. You're supposed to see about her salvation. And I'm like, okay, I've got all these questions, and I'm just supposed to say, by the way, you know, how do I work that into the conversation? I said, I had to have something natural. And I started thinking about it. What's the best decision I ever made in my life? I accepted Jesus Christ as my Savior when I was 5 years old. I've been walking with Him for a really long time, and my faith is strong. But I realized, as much as I struggle with decisions, as quick decisions, I mean, you know, I can make decisions, I just don't make them quickly. I realize that my decisions all depend on three things. What do I believe about God? What do I, in this situation, what do I believe about myself in this situation? And what do I believe about other people in this situation? So in that, you get some factors of, I need this, I have to have this. If we get into conflict, our view of the other person is often, I need this, what do I believe about them? They're never going to do this for me. You know, I have to do this because God's not sufficient, you know? Do you believe? Well, how well do you know your God? What do you know about your God? All of those things, that's the hinge every single time. God, self, and others. But in this, it's about belief. All hinges, all decisions, I believe, hinge on belief in those three areas. And guess what? This is where your faith story belongs. But it's going to be woven in simply and naturally. So what about our application here in our last minute? We want to nurture emotionally wise care teams. We want to facilitate difficult decisions with emotionally and spiritually wise care. And we want to avoid buyer's remorse with trustworthy processes like a simple decision chart. They need to own the decision. And we want to make a lasting difference, and that's the opportunity, your risky opportunity. Regardless of what her choice is today, you want to always keep the opportunity door open for her return, because she may be back. Maybe another pregnancy, maybe for abortion recovery training. Your compassionate understanding is what's going to open her heart. And finally, how are you going to accept the outcome? It all depends on whoever owns the outcome is probably going to be whoever owned the decision, who will be there for her tomorrow. You know, you aren't in charge of this outcome. You aren't in charge of this decision, but you have an important role to play. And the one thing you want is to influence what she will remember when the door closes behind her as she leaves. At Christmas, I think of the pageantry at Christmas and all the things we do. And I'd be taking down decorations and I would say, so what will they remember, thinking of the kids? What will they remember when all the pageantry is done? When everything is done, you want her to leave there feeling that she was deeply loved, heard, cared for, and understood. And she has an open door to come back. And I pray that God will empower you as you then go offer emotionally wise care. Use your SOG, use your READ, use your SERVE. And that's a wrap. I would love to continue engaging with you. If you fill out your name and your ad email, I will be happy to send you those things, and you'll get an invitation to that Zoom call.